KBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The Mississippi River keeps rising in southwest Wisconsin. Some people are evacuating their homes. The river is swollen because of the rapidly melting snowpack further north. The National Weather Service says the big river should start to fall tomorrow. The river at La Crosse hit close to 16 feet yesterday. It's expected to slowly go down through the weekend. Republican state lawmakers are unveiling their shared revenue plan today. Shared revenue is the money the state sends to local governments. Their plans include a $100 million innovation fund to encourage sharing of services like police and fire protection. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss calls it doing more with less. In sports, the Bucks are out of the playoffs after last night's Game 5 overtime loss to Miami. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come take it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us. Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come take it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some,
that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
Room, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm still stuck on the political headline. It's just all day. It's stuck with me. Headline at Politico. White House regroups after McCarthy's debt ceiling success. What is the White House regrouping on? Is this the regrouping on, oh my gosh, they gave us a really good document to run our next campaign on to attack Republicans with? Because they want to cut 22% of the VA. They want to cut Social Security by the administration by 22%. They want to slash and burn our economy. I can't believe they did this, but they did. And here to share some thoughts on what this could mean, what the Limit, Save, and Grow Act would actually do to our economy. That's why I've asked Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Also the co-author of Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be on tonight, Rick. Thank you.
So, you know, here's the thing. I keep looking at this piece of legislation that it's not even a legislation. It's a proposal. I keep looking at this proposal and going, what exactly are you thinking? Cutting spending by 22%. This is going to put the brakes on the economy and cause massive pain and suffering across all swaths of our economy.
It could be they're planning to run on massive pain and suffering under the Biden administration. And, you know, hope that people will think it's all Biden's fault and vote for Trump again, I guess. I don't know what else. I mean, they want to have federal spending grow far less than inflation. Their number one priority, which they've been talking about since the day they were sworn in, is to take away money from the IRS. Even they say it's going to increase the deficit because people are going to pay less taxes if you have the IRS having less inspectors to argue with people, especially the rich people. But they don't care about that because it's okay if rich people don't pay their taxes, according to them. They want to ban all assistance to people with student loans because that's just unheard of, that college students would get some help from the government. No help for renewable energy. They want to have work requirements for 55-year-old people who are getting supplemental nutrition assistance, you know, what we used to call food stamps. And they want to have subsidies for more people using fossil fuels that pollute more because they think that's a good idea. I mean, it's just absurd what they're trying to do, Rick. I can see things from their point of view.
I have the same kind of, I can't believe they did this, you know, as a political observer, as someone who, you know, just as a spectator going, wow, you dealt yourself a really crummy hand on purpose, because this is a lot of bad. And here's the thing. I don't know how it helps with inflation. By slashing spending so dramatically aren't you slamming on the brakes and causing massive layoffs? I mean, Moody's is saying 780,000 potential job losses. I mean, you know, as a Wall Street guy, isn't this going to cause massive harm?
Well, if they end up with massive amounts of layoffs and less money for, you know, people who are financially challenged who get food stamps, yeah, it could cut down on inflation. I mean, if there's huge numbers of people losing their jobs, they're not going to be buying, you know, eggs anymore. And that then I doubt we'll see the price of eggs going up as much. But I don't think that's what the American people want. I don't think they want to see inflation going down because no one can afford to buy anything. I think they want to see inflation going down because companies stop raising the prices of stuff so much more than they're raising wages. And even, you know, listen to the Chipotle CEO speak the other day. He's saying they're raising prices far more than inflation. And now even the price of avocados has gone down and their profits are up because they're not reducing prices of guacamole just because prices go down, even though they increased it when prices went up. We're seeing more profits for companies that deal with food and stuff like that that's gone up a lot. And people are making a little more money, but not enough to keep up. It's just bad.
Yeah. Now, the other part of this is my fear is the fear of the opposite. You know, say it's going to, you know, slow down inflation. My fear is deflation. My fear is we do so much that we cause things to go in the opposite direction where, you know, you've got all this surplus of stuff going on, nobody with any money, and things have to go the other way, which causes, well, even more problems.
It could. I mean, I wonder if in their hearts they actually are looking for some sort of massive economic slowdown and trouble so they can, you know, run on that.
No, that's what I said. I said, look, this is the, it's not the Limit, Save, and Grow Act. It's the Let's Shoot the Hostages Act, because this is what they're basically doing. They're going to take us to the brink on raising the debt ceiling, which is stupid to me. Or look, they want to default. So give me what we want. Crash the economy with massive spending cuts, or we're going to crash the economy by defaulting and causing all kinds of other problems. The only thing I can come up to is they want the recession they've been hoping and praying for so they can try and pin it on Biden. That's all that's out there.
I mean, I think that's distinctly possible. I mean, I wish that wasn't the case, but it seems to be. The analogy I try to make with people, it's if your spouse gave you a shopping list and a budget and told you to go shopping and you came back with everything and you spent the amount of money you're supposed to, and then your spouse said, oh, well, I'm not going to pay the credit card bill on your credit card unless you agree to, I don't know, wash my car every week for the rest of the year or something. It's ridiculous. We can't have a debate about paying the bills for things we already bought last year.
I gotta stop you here. Wait a second. This is, I'm wondering if my wife would fall for that.
No. Anything's possible, Rick.
Nah, she just said no. You know, but hey, it might have been worth a try if you thought it would have worked. But no, this is the weird part of where we're at, and I gotta wonder how much this is affecting what's going on. Generally, I don't care what happens on Wall Street. I'm a Main Street guy. But, you know, they do kind of work a little bit together. How much damage have we already done to Wall Street? And how much more could this do either way? If they get their wet dream list of 22% cuts, which they're not going to, or we default, what do things look like, do you think?
I don't really care about the people that work on Wall Street all that much. I mean, yes, there's a few hundred thousand people, and a lot of them are just regular people that get up and work for a living. And there's a few very rich people. But what I do care about is half the people in our country have money in the stock market through their IRAs or 401ks or pension plans or something, about half the people in the country. And if they can crash the economy by having a default on U.S. treasuries, which is always considered risk-free, that's going to cause a massive problem with anyone who has money invested in any part of the financial markets, whether it's stocks or bonds. Even money market funds aren't going to do well if that happens. Right now, we've been living since really before World War II with the U.S. dollar as the primary currency for the whole world. People use U.S. dollars in the Middle East for pricing oil and buying airplanes in France and things in Asia too. And if they end up causing people to lose faith in the U.S. dollar and go to, I don't know, Chinese renminbis or Russian rubles or something, that's going to be a massive, massive decrease in the power of the United States of America. And personally, I think that's bad for a lot of the people in our country, although maybe not for Republican congressmen.
It's crazy. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. If you want to check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Also check out his book, Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. And we'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at this. Now, you brought up 401ks, and I'm getting it from all sides. Everyone's going, you know, my 401k was so much better under Trump. You know, Biden's done all this stuff. He's caused all this inflation. My argument is inflation was going to happen no matter who the president was. The $1,400 that they gave out didn't cause this. Supply chain issues had a big part of it. Greed had a big part of it. But you know, these are a lot of things outside of Biden's control. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of companies raising prices far more than they're raising, than the prices they pay are being raised, far more than wages are going up. And corporate profits are way up. The reason people's 401ks did well under Trump is because they reduced corporate taxes. I did well under Trump, too, financially. Stock market did very well until the pandemic, of course. And that's because the tax rates were reduced for big corporations. If you own a big company and the tax rate went from 35% down to 20%, you're making a lot more money.
So wouldn't the argument then go, Morris, if it went down from 30 to 20, we should take it from 20 down to 10 because my 401k can do better. Shouldn't that be the argument?
Well, yeah. If the half of the country that owns stock, their 401ks do better. And the few people like me who get all their money from investing in the stock market, I would do great if you got rid of corporate taxes altogether. But that wouldn't help most Americans. Most Americans who actually work for a living would be worse off because we'd be making the workers pay all the taxes, and the investors like me would have far lower taxes to pay through our stocks and our corporations and whatnot. So yeah, that would make the rich a lot richer and make the people in the middle who have 401ks a little bit better off and make a lot of people a lot worse off.
Yeah. So you know, what's
exactly
interesting to me
what
is that
in 2017. That's exactly why people voted Democrat in 2018.
So what's interesting to me is, you know, this belt tightening talk. You know, we need 22% across the board cuts, without talking about raising revenue. And I don't know about your household, but you know, when the budgets are tight, I work a little bit of overtime. We bring a little bit more money in before we start, you know, cutting off, you know, important things like, I don't know, paying our bills or fixing the hole in the roof or putting gas in the car. You may work a little bit extra to bring in a little more revenue into the house. How come we're not talking about that almost at all? I mean, there's almost no one talking about raising taxes except for you, you folks at the Patriotic Millionaires.
We're working on it. We were having parties last week in Washington. You know, you had some beers, I think, at our one of our cocktail parties.
I did, yes.
So we're doing the best we can to get people talking about raising taxes for the rich. You know, we got a bunch of congressmen walking out on the east lawn of the Capitol building talking about it. So I'm trying. I really am. I even went on Fox News last week. Okay, so that's what I was doing.
And you did very well. I mean, so the question is, how do we get you into more places? How do we get that message, you know, blaring out louder and stronger? Because, look, I think this could be that issue that is nonpartisan to where we go, look, you know, the old idea of being, you know, back in the cave, the one with the big shoulders carries the most water.
It should be, but it's not, because these congressmen, they spend all of their time talking to the top half of the people in the economy, and in fact, the part of the very top of the top half, because they need all this money to run their campaigns. It all comes down to campaign finance. Yeah. And after a while, you spend all of your time schmoozing with rich people. You get to understand how it's so difficult to be rich and have to like pay taxes and stuff. I mean, you know, rich people don't like paying taxes. At least some of them don't. I get messages from congresspeople every week. Oh, Congressman so-and-so is coming by New York and would love to sit down and find out what your priorities are. And And believe me, most people who spend an hour with some random congressman are not talking about taxing the rich more. And the people who spend time with random congresspeople are generally people with a lot of money who make a lot of donations. I'll tell you that.
No, no. I have friends who are in Congress. They tell me no one's ever bought my vote, but they buy my ear 15 minutes at a time as I'm begging for campaign money. It is not a surprise.
Yeah, I have business cards, say Patriotic Millionaires on them. Very few people turn down a meeting with the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires.
I can see that. But you know, look, you're a very influential guy and very interesting to talk to. So last question I've got for you. And going back to this Politico argument, the Politico headline of the White House having to regroup. Do you see this as something the White House is going to be able to use as a strategist? Do you see this as a moment where they have to regroup, or is this like I think this is a gift that gives the Biden administration to go look at what Republicans want to do to you?
I honestly believe that it's allowing the president to make a firm choice. They're saying, here's what the Republicans want to do, and here's what I want to do, and you have a choice. And I think they're making clear demarcation between the two sides. The president's first ad has flags and patriotic music and say, we are the people fighting for your freedom to be able to make choices and have enough money to pay for stuff. That is real freedom. And the Republicans are against that. They want you to be serfs. And I mean, that's not what Biden said. But I think that's what we're going to be able to run on, the Democrats.
Well, it's going to be. We'll see how this plays out. But Morris, I appreciate the insight. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Great, Rick. Great to be in your show. Thank you.
Morris Pearl, chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. Again, check out the website, patrioticmillionaires.org, and get the book, Tax the Rich, Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. Quick break, right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Got an email from Brian listening on KCAA in San Bernardino. He asks, Rick, listening to you talk about taxing the rich today, and it sounded too long to fight back against the simplistic responses I get from my coworkers. He says, I hate taxes is so much easier than justifying tax the rich. Any suggestions on how we have these conversations? Look, you're never going to convince the I hate taxes crowd to suddenly embrace them. It's not, because they've been trained like Pavlovian dogs. Anytime we hear the word taxes, we get all frothy in the mouth without asking who, why, what, and where, and how. You start talking about paving the road. Like, there are parts of my little hamlet here that could seriously use some investment, and I understand the money is coming. My Jeep doesn't like it. Doesn't like those roads. My front end, not thrilled. That's how we pave our roads. But you have to explain that on a certain level. But you know, and we can talk about all the positives we want. But if they have their heads in the, you're lost. And the thing is there are a bunch of reasons why we should be taxing the rich. A huge part of it is, I argue back during the Tea Party years, the redistribution angle. We have redistributed wealth from working people to rich people. We've created a large billionaire class through our tax code. We can undo that. So, taxing the very wealthy is one way to reduce inequality, to reduce the kind of, and not just inequality in wages, but inequality in political power, inequality in educational outcomes, inequality in healthcare outcomes, whole bunch of stuff. But one of the main reasons you tax the rich is, investing in what you need. Social programs, for instance, Social Security, we could fully fund and expand. Medicare, Medicaid, all of those things. Infrastructure, education, healthcare, all of that, we could be doing it. But more importantly, as well, is economic growth. And this is the thing that nobody talks about. And this is where the frustration in looking at what McCarthy and the Klan are doing. By reducing spending, you're taking money out of the economy, which is going to reduce the jobs, which means people are going to have less income, which means you're slowing things down. Investing smartly in things that we need, roads, bridges, broadband access, solar power, all of these things. We have the ability to create an economy, a just economy, where workers actually get a fair shake. And for me, if Biden would do the things that I want him to do, use his executive order power much more frequently. For instance, saying that any organization doing business with the federal government has to allow their workers to join and form unions and to engage in collective bargaining. And none of this union busting stuff, hiring these high power union busting firms. You sit down, you negotiate, you treat your employees with dignity. I would write that in a heartbeat. But, that's not where we are. There are so many reasons why we should have a much higher tax rate. And we can't have those conversations because, again, we've been trained for two generations now that taxes are bad, that it's government stealing from us. And that's not reality. It's the price of admission. It's the price of being part of society. And I had someone recently go, well, you advocate for a 90% tax rate. What if they were taxing you at 90%? And I said, I would be thrilled to be taxed at 90%. Thrilled. Because it means I'd be making several million dollars a year, or under the Patriotic Millionaire Plan, over $100 million a year. You tell me, would you be okay being taxed at 90% if your paycheck said $100 million at the end of the year? And it's not on all $100 million. It is a graduated progressive tax where the more you make, the higher your tax rate goes. And what the patriotic millionaires are talking about doing is, that living wage number, whatever you put that in, I think they've got it at $36,000. No one pays taxes on the first $36,000. And then incrementally, much like the Eisenhower years, incrementally that rate goes up, small percentage by small percentage, all the way up to $100 million. To where you're not paying 90%, you're paying 90% on that dollar over $100 million. And you take that revenue and you pay your bills. How do you think we got so deep in debt? We got so deep in debt by whipping out the credit card, paying for things that we need, things that we pushed for, and saying to the people who we used to tax, no, you go ahead. We'll put it on the arm. Don't worry about it. Let the taxpayer pick it up. Let those working stiffs pick it up. When do we say enough? When do we say no more? I think what Morris and his group are doing, extremely important. And we need to be pushing back against all of this. And this talk of inflation, it's crazy to me. You know, they're pointed all at Biden when the reality is supply chain issues are a huge part of this. Yeah, government spending, overspending government is, yeah, that's a problem. But I don't think we've overspent. A lot of our inflation problems, corporate greed. Maybe start reining that in. Greedflation, that's our problem. Look at our corporate profits. Nobody's hurting in the boardrooms. People are hurting who get up and punch a clock every day. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1825. That was the day that saw what is widely considered the first strike for the 10-hour workday. It happened in Boston, Massachusetts. Journeymen carpenters had grown tired of being required to work from sunup to sundown. They decided it was time to make a stand. But the master carpenters who controlled the craft did not side with the journeymen. The master carpenters claimed that the day-long toil had, quote, been customary from time immemorial. With this resistance from the top, the first 10-hour workday strike went down in defeat. But the idea had been born, and soon it began to grow. Boston carpenters struck again in 1832 and again 3 years later. These strikes were also unsuccessful. But during the last strike, the workers wrote a flyer that read, quote, "We have been too long subjected to the odious, cruel, unjust, and tyrannical system which compels the operative mechanic to exhaust his physical and mental powers. We have rights and duties to perform as American citizens and members of society, which forbid us to dispose of more than 10 hours for a day's work." These words echoed to Philadelphia, where workers took up the banner for the 10-hour workday. The strike spread across the city of brotherly love, from printers to carpenters, from bakers to public employees. 10 hours became the law in Philadelphia, then throughout Pennsylvania. From there, the call for 10 hours spread across the country. Later, the movement grew into a demand for the 8-hour workday. The ability of workers to have time away from the job to live a full life of dignity is one of the core causes of the labor movement. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Given the rabid right-wingism of most Republican office holders in my state of Texas, you might assume that the climate here is only fit for rattlesnakes, scorpions, and venomous critters of pious political extremism. Yet, the true Texas political character, historically and currently, is vehemently anti-corporate and deeply rooted in the uniting ethic of the common good. For an historic example, look to the state's first constitution. It outlawed banks and required a two-thirds vote of the legislature to form a corporation. And today, grassroots Texans in the rural town of Llano have just demonstrated the power of progressive community values that are common in this supposedly conservative state. The issue was book banning. A batch of political extremists had decided to purge the public library of 17 books. Porno, they shrieked, yet none are pornographic. They're simply about ideas and realities that Republican culture war zealots don't like, namely books documenting the history of institutional racism in America and the normality of America's LGBTQ community. Common sense Llano locals rebelled, suing the county government for autocratically trying to control the people's freedom to read and learn. And a federal judge has now ruled that the book banning was flagrantly unconstitutional, ordering the targeted titles back on the shelves. Then, in a collective spasm of knee-jerk ignorance and arrogance, the county's book banning officials announced that, by gollies, they would just defund and shut down the entire library system. Yeah, that'll teach people to respect authority. Again, though, locals rebelled, turning out in force to protest the officials' political chicanery, forcing them to reverse their closure scheme. This is Jim Hightower saying, as one 10-year-old student in Llano succinctly testified, it's not the county's job to burn the library down.
Well, Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Evidently, more stories coming out around the Tucker Carlson firing. Evidently, it's the text messages. Evidently, this is what the latest is, and I don't know if it's true or not. We may never know, and I don't really care. But the latest bit is it's the text messages. Evidently, there was some inflammatory stuff, possibly some racist stuff. Like we said yesterday, the Fox executives have their dirt dossier. This was probably a big part of it. Now, the interesting thing is I got a bunch of listeners saying this is time for Tucker to run for president. Get rid of Trump. Tucker for president. I'm waiting for that to happen. But here to share some thoughts on, well, just the whole bit of insanity and what it really means, I've asked our good friend Trygve Olson to come talk with us. Trygve is an advisor over at the Lincoln Project, also the principal over at Viking Strategies. Trygve, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks for having me on. It's good to talk to you again.
So what do you make of this? Does it matter? Does all of this nonsense, does this amount to a hill of beans?
Well, you know, so here's the thing. At pretty much any job in America, if you were to be using the C word towards your boss, coupled with the fact that, you know, Tucker is a purported capitalist, but the only person who seemed to advertise on his show was MyPillow guy. So, you know, I think between the economics and the fact that Tucker was doing things that, quite frankly, anybody who is working, if they do that kind of stuff, would probably get the axe dropped on him. He probably got a longer leash than most.
Yeah, but. No, I mean, but the reality is he did have a lot of people who bought into what he was selling on air, even though if you look at some of the text messages we've seen, maybe didn't quite, you know, wasn't on 100% behind. There was that Janice right. face kind of the person who was on screen, the person who was off screen. You know, maybe there's part of that. But
I kind of think, you know, what Tucker and Fox and a lot of media. I mean, and it's one of the reasons why I like what you do with your show, right? But there's a lot of media, and Fox is an example of this, that is based on selling, it's basically selling the sportification of politics. And, you know, Tucker Carlson clearly did not believe a lot of what he was saying, but he was saying it to get an audience.
Yep.
And to gin them up, and it's really unhealthy in our democracy when you have organizations like Fox that have built media empires on a business model that is all about outrage and overconfidence. And no. that's what they sell. And it's a dopamine hit for the people who are extremists because they want to get in to hear the next outrage. And the problem with it is it becomes circular. When you start doing the outrage thing, you have to get something more outrageous each time, and then you have to tell your people they know the truth, even though the stuff that you're peddling, you know yourself, isn't true.
No, that was the frame.
I don't
wasn't
know how
it?
They looked their kids in the eye.
That was the frame, wasn't it? You know, Tucker got fired because he was telling the truth, and my response right. back was, "Which truth? Which truth are we talking about? The one that he said on right. air, or the one that he said in his emails and his text? Which
right.
truth?"
I mean, Tucker Carlson clearly full well knew that the election wasn't a fraud, and yet he was giving voice to people like Sidney Powell, who were full-on not serious people who were doing real damage to democracy. And here's the thing. I think you and I, you know, we may have a little bit different politics, but we both care about democracy, and we probably both come from a pretty similar place. And the thing, part of the reason why I joined the Lincoln Project and why I felt like as I had to leave the Republican Party and just be a conservative without a home is that the people that Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson are taking advantage of are really good, hardworking people, and they're just selling them. They're the medicine man back in the 1800s, showing up in town offering bogus solutions to people who face real problems.
Yeah, but see, I'm at the point, Trigvi, where they're not even offering solutions at this point. It's just division. It's just, you know, it's the outrage candy that you talked about a moment ago.
Yeah.
It's not even real. I wish we were at a point where we were talking about policy and how we're going to move things forward. We got one party, the Republican Party, talking about how to take us backward, how to divide us, how to get us to hate each other. And you've got a Democratic Party that, I don't know, I think they're trying to find their way forward by, you know, reshoring some manufacturing and you know, investing in infrastructure and those things. I wish we were having those policy fights.
Yeah, and honestly, if we were having a serious conversation, I was on a flight. It's pretty funny. I was on a flight recently, and I sat down next to this guy, and we started a conversation. It was like a 6 a.m. flight, and it turns out he'd been a CEO of two of the biggest companies in America, and his plane was being fixed, but it turns out we started talking about manufacturing, and it was interesting because here's this guy, capitalist, and had been a CEO of these big companies, but he was talking about, you know, and asking the question, why are we not manufacturing chips in the United States? And he's like, that's, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that we could be manufacturing in the United States, and it would make the United States more secure. Like, there's things that we should be manufacturing that would be profitable, that would be good jobs for people, and we'd be making the country more safe.
Yeah, but this
wouldn't be in Taiwan where we're.
Yeah, none of this is new, though. I mean, I've been talking about this for all the years I've been doing this show. In fact, back in 2013, our friends over at the Alliance for American Manufacturing did a report on how desperate our military is, because a lot of the things that our military needs, we don't have the capacity to manufacture back in 2013. And it's only gotten worse since. I mean, I've been screaming about, hey, how about we reshore all the things? Let's just start with our military. If we're going to be a war society, at least make the stuff we need to get the planes to fly, the tanks to drive, the uniforms, all of that stuff. Start there if you have to.
We have been really short-sighted and sleeping. I mean, and you and I have talked
about
a bunch
sleeping.
Of times.
I'm going to go greedy. Yeah.
Well, I think we've been greedy. I think also, though, and you and I have talked a lot about Russia and Ukraine other times when I've been on. Like, I think we thought that we could take a hiatus from history. And I think you're right, and it's one of the things that you talk about. You know, both parties are a little bit are to blame in some degree for that happening.
Absolutely. You know, they sold us on the idea that we could all, you know, have corner office jobs. I lived through it. You know, you don't need to take VOTEC classes. Go to college, take on massive debt, invest in yourself, and you'll have that corner office job. We were sold that the only way to the middle class was with a college degree, because we were getting rid of all of those manufacturing jobs that supported families for years. So no wonder we are where we are, and no wonder we've got a generation of people who are so ticked off and angry that they're struggling, that they fall for the crap that's being thrown at them.
Yeah. And I know you're on in a bunch of stations in Wisconsin and on the Republican side, and you're seeing this nationally too. There's an attack on, you know, the attack on public schools is part of that. The attack on 2-year and vocational education, the kinds of things that actually build a solid middle class. What it does is it undermines what really has made America an exceptional place over a long period of time. America was at its best when it was making things, building things,
absolutely.
Doing things.
No, look, in October, we did a tour. And we went all through Wisconsin, we went through Iowa, we went through Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan. We went all through what used to be the productive breadbasket of this country, where we made stuff. We went to the places that used to be. We went to Akron, used to be the rubber capital. Toledo used to be the glass capital. Eau Claire, Wisconsin used to be rubber. You know, Iowa, we went to all of these places that used to be, and they're hollowed out because that manufacturing facility, that capacity, that pride is gone. And it wasn't that we lost it. Someone stole it. The greedy ex stole it.
Yeah. You know, I went to school in Eau Claire, and I was back there, I don't know, maybe a year, year and a half ago. And I've been in Eau Claire in 20 years. And that's a great example, that because, that, you know, the entire main street downtown of Eau Claire it's kind of been gutted out. The tire factory's gone. And quite honestly, even Cray Research, some of the tech stuff, gone. And, you know, we need politicians who, regardless of what their party are, that are serious. And we've had a whole lot of not serious, and we have a whole lot of carnival barkers like Tucker Carlson, who have been pushing incredibly not serious. And here's the thing is I know a lot of people are, at least on the left, I talk to people on the left who are excited. Well, Tucker Carlson's gone. That's great for democracy. Truth of the matter is somebody's going to come in and fill that void.
Yep. Somebody will be.
And it might be worse. It might be worse because if his audience fractures, they're in a position where they can go to people who are speaking specifically to whatever grievance Tucker has groomed them for and start pounding away on that. And it's going to take them from being extremists to being radicalized.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, the story today, Newsmax saw their numbers jump because a big portion of Tucker's audience went to Newsmax, which I think is crazier than Fox. And there's one that's even crazier than Newsmax. So you're right. You're taking people who are already radicalized and making them even further to the fringe. And that's not good for, it's not good for democracy. It's not good for it's not good for communities.
Well, you know, so from my work abroad, Rick, I have some experience and expertise in both extremism and radicalization. And radicalization occurs when people are given need. You know, there's some threat to my values or my nation, network, I'm part of a group of people, and narrative. And if you think about what and it's part of the reason why I started speaking out more publicly. If you think about what Donald Trump did on January 6th, the need, it's a fraud, come save America, network, you're part of a group of patriots, and then he gave narrative, we're going to walk down to the Capitol and we're going to fight like hell. And that's no different than anybody else who has attempted to radicalize people. Tucker Carlson was doing that nightly, And somebody else is going to come along and fill that. And we need to figure out ways to speak honestly to those people. And quite honestly, the more they're fighting amongst themselves, the better off we are. Because if they're fighting amongst themselves, they're not going to be fighting with us.
No, it's an excellent point. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Trigg V. Olson, principal at Viking Strategies, also a senior advisor over at the Lincoln Project. You know, we're seeing a lot of that radicalization happen on the trans issue. I mean, as I've said, it's a complex, way too complex of an issue to have to sloganeer and to do what we're doing. But it's all about dividing us and putting us into camps and giving that narrative that our children are under attack. And we're going to rise up and fight for them, because it is about it's more about dividing than it's about solving any problems.
Well, so it's a little different than the trans issue, but it's another one that's along the same vein. So a really good friend of mine is a Chamber of Commerce member. The only Republican he's never voted for in his life is Donald Trump, right? So he's a Republican guy, although he probably wouldn't consider himself that anymore. He's president of a school board, local school board back home in Wisconsin, and they have a book banning issue. There's a group of maybe, I don't know what they represent, but there's maybe like 500 of them that are showing up constantly at the school board. They ran a slate of pro-Trump, pro-American value candidates on this stuff, and they lost. They got clobbered. So recently they've been showing up at school board members' houses saying, you're not allowing debate on these books that we want banned, because they had a discussion about it. They held a vote and they were like, we're not banning these books. And so then their argument is, well, you're not allowing debate. And, you know, he's calling me up. He's like, what do we do about them? I tried to tell him that we had a debate. It was called an election where we won with 70% of the vote. And they don't want to hear it. They just want their way.
No, and, but this is are they part of that Moms for Liberty group? Because we've got a bunch of those nitwits in my neighborhood, too.
Yes, he didn't say that, but that was the first thing that went through my mind. I'm sure they are. And so, you know, it's all about – it's what these people are peddling is just trying to scare people. And, you know, whether it's the trans issue or books or the – It is that constant search for what can we generate outrage around. And, you know, the term for it, when it's used directly to try and create extremism, is it's a Russian term, lesneya informatsiya, is what they use in that part of the world. And basically what they try and do is seed the grievance. So you throw out anything that somebody could have a grievance about, and you see what sticks, and then you amplify them.
Oh, they're good at that.
And they do that all the time.
Yep. You listen to right-wing talk radio or the F channel. So the question I have for you, and let's finish on this, because this is the important part. How do we fight back on that? How do people recognize what's being thrown out as just simply outrage candy? And then how do we spit it out? How do we fight back on this?
Well, with people that are in your immediate, I mean, really, the hard part is they radicalize in bulk, and we have to help people one on one. You help them by listening, the people that you care about in your life who are succumbing to it, and you look for opportunities to create cognitive dissonance. In fact, I speak on this, and I do this whole thing about Kurt Cobain and that he's not really dead, and he tore down the Soviet Union and lives in France. It's a real conspiracy theory. You know, and I talk about it, and it's what you have to do is you have to find things that are incongruent. You're never going to lecture them to change, but you can find the things where how they live their life is very different from those simplistic answers that they're speaking.
Right.
And you have to, you know, with the Kurt Cobain thing, I always talk about send Dave Grohl's book where he talks about it, right, as a Christmas gift, and then encourage the person to have a conversation about it. That's what you have to be able to find. You have to be able to find the examples that they can personalize to try and get them to see.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, Trigvi, it's hard. I mean, when you hear the kind of flat earther kind of talk, when you hear the JFK Jr. is coming back, Dealey Plaza to run for vice president, when you hear this stuff, it's so hard to take anyone seriously who has any of those beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And honestly, one of the things that these kinds of actors, and it's what Putin's doing in Ukraine, quite honestly. You know, they want to keep going. They're going to keep going until you get worn out and no longer are willing to try. And that's what they want all of us to do.
Right.
You know, you and I might have different politics. They want us to get tired of focusing on democracy and start fighting about other stuff and just give up. Because we just have to. It is hard. I mean, like everybody else in this era, but in my case, I wake up every day. How do I help try and keep Donald Trump from becoming president? I wish I could be doing something else. That gets tiring.
I'm right all there with you. For me, as I say all the time, my North Star is how do we make working people's lives better? I wish we didn't have to have these baseline, fight these baseline fights of simple democracy and having elections matter. But here we are. Trigvi, I appreciate the time. As always, incredible stuff. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Oh, absolutely, Rick. Thank you for having me.
Good stuff. Our good friend Trigvi Olson, he is the principal over at Viking Strategies, also a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. You have probably heard about the Red Scare, when thousands of people lost their jobs in the 1950s for allegedly harboring communist sympathies. But have you ever heard of the Lavender Scare that happened during those same years? Thousands of LGBT people lost their jobs due to discrimination. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1953. President Dwight David Eisenhower issued Executive Order 10450. The order declared that federal employees at all levels of government needed to be reliable, trustworthy, of good conduct and character, and of complete and unswerving loyalty to the United States. Later, the order listed reasons federal employees could be fired, including any criminal, infamous, dishonest, immoral, or notoriously disgraceful conduct, habitual use of intoxicants to excess, drug addiction, sexual perversion. That last item was widely understood as a euphemism for gay or lesbian activity. Major newspapers of the day often use the word perversion to refer to homosexuality. The argument was made that homosexual people were a potential threat to national security because foreign agents could blackmail them for information by threatening to reveal their sexual preferences. More than 1,400 federal employees lost their jobs within the first 4 months after President Eisenhower signed the executive order. This anti-homosexual discrimination extended beyond the federal government. Industries that relied on government contracts took the order as a cue to conduct similar purges. In 1957, World War II veteran and astronomer Dr. Frank Kameny was fired from the Army Map Service for being gay. After his firing, Dr. Kameny dedicated his life to leading the fight to end LGBT discrimination. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. My favorite, I think one of my favorite bits today, Ron Johnson, Wisconsin senator, said, you know, he doesn't get why no one cares about climate change. Doesn't care because we're not Africa. You know, we're not going to be the ones who suffer the worst of it right now. Doesn't matter to us. In fact, you know, he thinks, you know, Wisconsin could use a little less snow. Yeah, that's coming from a U.S. senator. And you wonder why people think the future is so screwed up, that you wonder why young people are flipping out. Because you've got senators saying dumb stuff. That's almost as dumb as the Inhofe thing going, here, climate change doesn't exist because I got a snowball in my hand. Wow. Wow. I mean, just mind-blowing. But again, you know, the things, the hey, look at me that you see coming out of the right, the attention-seeking, the, you know, the mommy didn't love me enough, I guess, kind of stuff is mind blowing. And I look at Nikki Haley said that, you know, Biden's likely to die in 5 years. He announced he's running. I think that we can be very clear and say with a matter of fact, if you vote for Joe Biden, you are really counting on President Harris, because the idea that he would make it until 86 is not something I think is likely. And that's going to be what the Republicans run on. We're hoping Joe dies. And then the next part of this, the next part of it is the racial component. It's all going to be about Kamala. It's all going to be about her. That's what their scheme is. For me, you know, the reality, it's the policies that I'm voting for right now. And I've always voted for policies. I've always voted on issues. And right now, the Republicans have shown me they have no policy chops. There's nothing there. I like what Biden's done so far. And I don't care that he can't get a sentence out. It's the policy. That to me is important. Do I like every policy? No. But there are some really important ones. The manufacturing, the infrastructure. Look, we've been talking about those things for years. I've been literally talking about infrastructure and manufacturing for all 18 years of doing this show. It was one of the first topics that I brought up from the Labor Day of 2005. It was one of the first things. We need jobs. We need to rebuild and create the infrastructure of the future. And we haven't done it in a way that really matters. And look, even with the money that Biden did get, the trillion plus, it's not enough. Not close. We need multiples of that. But do you think, given the fact that we've got a Republican Party who's saying, hey, we're going to cut all government functions by 22%. We're going to slash and burn. We're going to drag that baby into the bathtub and drown it. You think we're going to get that kind of investment in the future? Because unlike a lot of people, I think about what we're going to leave to the next generation, because I think about what my grandparents' generation left for us. The kind of investments, the kind of institutions, the kind of opportunities, the kind of future. And I want that for my kids. Is that too much to ask, you think? Is that too crazy? I don't think so. And look, the majority of people I know feel the same way. This is something we can agree on. See how easy that is? It's that simple. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Stitcher to iTunes, Podbean, all of those places, iHeart, everywhere in between. Appreciate you being...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.